It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferris. You're with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up at Central Time, we'll celebrate the 150th anniversary of Yosemite National Park with a look at the photography of Ansel Adams.
First, we're talking about new federal guidelines issued by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention on Ebola.
The new guidelines separate people into categories based on their level of exposure to people with Ebola. Each category has its own set of preventive measures. Those who are considered high risk, for example, people who have cared for family members with Ebola without protective gear, they're not allowed to use public transportation, board an airplane, or go to work. People who are considered low risk just need to monitor their temperature and their symptoms.
Here to talk about the new guidelines and put them into context is Dr. Jeff Duchin. He's the chair of the Infectious Diseases Society of America's Public Health Committee. Jeff, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So let's walk through these new guidelines by the CDC. What are they?
Well, these guidelines are intended to assure that persons who come back from Ebola-affected countries or have exposures to potential Ebola infectious situations are appropriately monitored by public health authorities. You know, we have a couple of systems in place now to decrease the already relatively low risk of Ebola in our country, and these include both exit screening from the affected areas, entry screening at our ports where all persons whose itineraries originate in these affected areas are now deplaning and being screened actively for illness. At those locations, they're providing contact information for their final destination, and that information is being forwarded to state and local public health authorities so that when they arrive, they can be actively monitored for 21 days. And that active monitoring is really the crux of the guidance, because we know that based on our experience with Ebola from past outbreaks and from what's known about how the virus acts in the body, persons who don't have symptoms don't spread the disease. And the infectiousness increases such that early in the illness, it's unlikely to be highly infectious. And as the illness becomes more severe with uncontrolled diarrhea, vomiting, possibly bleeding, the risk of infection is quite high. And at that point, patients are typically in healthcare facilities where our healthcare providers are taking special precautions to prevent exposure.
As I understand it, the CDC can't actually enforce these guidelines. For example, New York and New Jersey seem to be creating some of their own guidelines or protocols. So how will they actually be used around the United States?
Right. So the guidance is for implementation at the state and local level, because the authority to restrict the movement and, if necessary, involuntarily restrict the movement of persons that are not traveling internationally or between states is really a power of the states or local governments. CDC has authority to restrict movement of people coming into the U.S. and moving from state to state. But most activity is occurring within states, and that's where the power lies to enforce any sort of limitations or restrictions on movement. Now, the guidance is pretty clear for people at high risk and low risk. I don't think it's very controversial. It's very direct. I think the instructions to restrict the movements of persons at high risk and not to restrict the movement of people at low risk is quite clear. But there are some subtleties and some options involved in what might be implemented with respect to people who have intermediate levels of risk. So the CDC is calling these some risk or low but not zero risk. And lots of the returning humanitarian workers and physicians and healthcare providers, nurses that are essential to actually controlling this outbreak in West Africa. And I think it's really important here to understand that the number one priority to reduce the risk in the U.S. is to stop this outbreak in West Africa. That is the only way that we're ultimately going to eliminate any Ebola concerns here in the U.S. So we need to do everything possible to allow our healthcare workers to facilitate that. There's a need for tens of thousands of healthcare workers to get that under control, and our folks need to continue to participate. But many of the people who come back and fall into this some risk category are humanitarian workers and are healthcare providers from U.S.-based who are returning. And so the CDC guidance offers several options for managing those folks. again, the key is active monitoring of symptoms, and that's really what we endorse at the Infectious Disease Society of America. We don't believe that involuntary restrictions of their movement is necessary or appropriate.
Well, let's talk about that a little, because there have been those who have been calling for mandatory quarantines, among them lawmakers, some of them prominent. Why do you think that mandatory quarantines are not the right way to go?
Well, a couple of reasons. I think one is the risk to the public is very low if people are complying with active monitoring. For most of these people who are asymptomatic, the risk is zero. And early in the disease, when symptoms are recognized promptly, the risk is probably very close to zero. So if you've got people who are complying, you want to use the least restrictive measures necessary to get your aims accomplished. The healthcare workers that come back understand Ebola disease. They will know that they're going to need to be monitored for 21 days. They need to be contacted in person at least once a day, and once by telephone or email, so that at the earliest onset of symptoms, they can then be restricted from public activity. They can be evaluated and tested to see if they have an illness that might be Ebola. But involuntarily restricting their activities when they present little to no risk to the public can be counterproductive. Again, we need to really do everything possible to help our healthcare workers participate in the important outbreak control activities that are needed in West Africa. And by putting up barriers like this, which can make it difficult for them to participate by not allowing them to do what they need to do when they come home, perhaps be with their families, go to work, do other things that they feel like they need to do. They've already taken some time off to participate in outbreak control activities if they can't work or participate in whatever it is their obligations are when they get back. That may inhibit people from volunteering to do this important work. In addition, if folks feel like this is an inappropriate and punitive action, it's possible that they will try and conceal their history, and maybe we won't be able to even recognize then people coming in who have legitimate risk factors for Ebola infections, but aren't getting into the system. So currently, these folks are recognized, they come into the system voluntarily, and it's through their cooperation that we're able to monitor their symptoms and protect the public health by taking them and isolating them if they become symptomatic. But if people decide that this is a punitive and inappropriate strategy, such as involuntary quarantine, and they decide to try and evade it, then we lose them altogether, and we don't have the ability to monitor their symptoms or be able to promptly get them out of the public or situations where they would be in contact with others should they develop early symptoms.
Now, recently, a New York doctor who had been treating Ebola patients with Doctors Without Borders was found to have the virus, had been on a subway. There were maps showing all the places that he had been, including a restaurant and, in public places. And that caused some anxiety in New York for a while. But you're saying, even though there may be anxiety associated with the movement of these caregivers who've been in Ebola-stricken places, that it's better to stick with active monitoring. Why do you make the case for that?
Because, and I recognize the anxiety, we really need to work with the public and do everything we can to sort of reassure them about the actual level of risk. The reason I say that we should not restrict the activity is because the risk is extremely low. Remember that Mr. Duncan, the Liberian who died of Ebola, was in his household symptomatic before he was admitted to the hospital for days, and no one in his household developed Ebola virus. Household members, and these are close contacts of Ebola virus patients who don't have direct contact with their blood or body fluids, who are not caregivers of sick Ebola patients, do not get infected readily. It's not highly infectious. So the risk to the public is very low, particularly early in the disease. I think it's important that we do whatever we can to reassure the public. And I think one thing that might be a reasonable option would be to ask persons who are being monitored to limit non-essential activities so that the concern, the perception, is minimized, perception of risk, even though it's not a true threat to the public health. And also perhaps to keep a log of their activities so that if it's ever necessary, the public can be reassured that we know where these people have been, we can get counseling out, because really that's what's most needed, is just good information to the people about the low level of risk that they actually have. And you see in New York as well, the activities of the physician the night before he became ill, the day before he became ill, created some public consternation and concern. But in the medical and scientific community, the risk assessment is that he presented almost no risk to the public.
And we leave it there. Dr. Jeff Duchin, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Good night.
Jeff Duchin is chair of the Infectious Diseases Society of America's Public Health Committee. He was with us to talk about the new federal guidelines for Ebola issued recently by the CDC.
And you can hear more about Ebola tomorrow morning on the Joy Cardine Show. Joy's guest says when it comes to Ebola, we should fear the fear more than we should fear the virus. That's tomorrow morning at 6:00.